Brace yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, here comes the unfiltered truth about money, investing, and retirement planning from a man who will give it to you straight. No bias and no spin. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. As we love to do, we're going to do the market for Friday's trade, and then we're going to do the whole week. So let's get to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Welcome, Scott. How are you?
I'm terrific, David. How are you?
I'm doing well. I know this is your favorite show because you get to be here for the whole program.
It is the delight of my day.
Outstanding. Mine too. So let's break it down for them, the trading activity for Friday, and then we'll get into the whole week and other things going on.
All right. Well, looking at Friday's trade, the Dow was up 11.75 points at 14,712. That's not really such a spectacular day, but for the week, the Dow up 165 points. That's a nice week. We'll take that. The NASDAQ off 10 for Friday's trade at 3279, up 73 points on the week. For Friday's trade, the S&P down 3 points at 1582. That's 27 points on the week. Now, keep in mind that we had 2 days that were remarkably flat. I mean flat as flat can be, and still up, you know, well north of 1.5% on most of the major indices. So, overall, a very good week, particularly on the heels of some relatively weak economic data. Looking at the commodities complex for Friday's trade, gold off 880 an ounce at 1453, oil down 80 cents a barrel at 92.84, yields on tens fell 5 basis points to 166, and the dollar euro trade, which it was most of the week, flat at $1.30 to the euro.
Okay, so you know, overall for the week, you had a overall positive, but at spots where we were flat and not as much going on. Are we getting into more expected volatility, or are things starting to calm back down a little bit?
Well, you know, anytime you have 2 flat days, that's a pretty low volatility week. We have some pretty important economic reports coming up later this week, as well as the continuation of earnings season. Looking back more at what happened for Friday's trade, we did have some economic releases. The Department of Commerce said first quarter GDP. Now, this is the first look that we have at the GDP. We have successive months of revisions on the GDP for the prior quarter. So this is our first look at first quarter GDP. Came in at 2.7%. Expectations were 3%. So a little bit lackluster there. It didn't send the market south by any means, but kind of disappointing. A lot of analyst firms revising their GDP estimates downward based on that news. Also on the economic front, Friday, consumer sentiment, this is the University of Michigan number, was down to 76.4 from 78.6 in March, but a little better than expectations. Expectations from the analyst community at 73.2. We are heavy in earnings season, as you know. Chevron reported Friday. They beat expectations pretty handily. Revenue was off a little bit due to falling oil prices, but shares were higher for the day on Friday for Chevron. Amazon posted earnings that beat expectations, but shares also sold off on weak guidance. Guidance is just simply when the company comes out and says, here's what we're expecting for the remainder of the year. And guidance sometimes is more important than the earnings themselves. Starbucks also announced, they actually announced late Thursday, and they had a revenue number that fell short of estimates, so a little bit of negative news for them. But the big surprise, continuing strength in the home builders market, D.R. Horton announced results on Friday. They reported 32 cents a share. Analysts were looking for 19 cents a share.
That's really good stuff.
Looking at the week ahead, we do have some important economic numbers from the housing market, from the Fed, and a continuation of busy earnings. Monday, we have the pending home sales, as well as earnings from Express Scripts and Hartford Financial. Tuesday, we get the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index, as well as Chicago PMI, earnings from British Petroleum and Pfizer. Wednesday, we'll start to see the beginning of the employment numbers. We're already into May as of Wednesday, ADP employment report. Also, we get the FOMC meeting announcement, which I'm not expecting much out of. And finally, earnings from Comcast, MasterCard, Clorox, Facebook, all on Wednesday. Thursday, we have the Challenger job cuts report, the jobless claims, as always. Thursday, I think, will be the biggest sort of stealth number on the ECB announcement, the European Central Bank. A lot of analysts are looking for a launch of a quantitative easing program there from the ECB. Also on Thursday, earnings from General Motors and Kraft Foods. And then finally on Friday, we get our big non-farm payroll report, which is the unemployment report, as well as earnings from Berkshire Hathaway.
Well, that's all very good stuff, and there's a lot there to anticipate and see how it's going to play out. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, what we'll do is we'll dig into some more of these numbers that Scott talked about, some of the other details of what's happening, and what you should be prepared for. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
That we will do. We will break it down, and that's very good because there's a lot of stuff going on here, Scott. I have a bunch of things I wanted to get to, but if you want to go ahead and kind of give a little bit more detail on some of the things we talked about, and then I'll be happy to chime in with some things I saw that I think are very important for people to be aware of.
Yeah, it's a good time to talk about how the earnings season is going. We're about halfway through, a little bit more than halfway through of earnings season, depending on which matrix you look at. If we look at the S&P 500, we're almost exactly halfway through as of Friday. 248 of the S&P 500 companies have reported earnings. 69% of those companies have beaten earnings estimates. That's, you know, in the ballpark of what we're looking for. Only about 41% have beaten on revenue. Let's compare that, however, to non-S&P 500 companies. Only 55% of those have beaten earnings estimates. So what that tells us is that the large cap companies are just handling this slow recovery a whole lot better than the smaller companies. Now, that doesn't always reflect itself in the stock market. As you know, small cap and mid cap indices have had a very, very strong year.
Sure.
But if we start to see, you know, more volatility in the recovery, meaning we start to see more negative economic figures, I think the S&P companies are much more well suited to handle it.
Would it also be fair to say, Scott, that the S&P companies, these larger companies, are being more affected by the opportunity to refinance debt, and that falls to the bottom line?
It does, except that a lot of what we're seeing in the market is more of a deleveraging process than anything.
Okay.
So we are seeing some refinancing of debt, but more than anything, I'm seeing bonds called left and right from all kinds of different
companies. Are just taking the cash and paying them off.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Instead of hiring and doing other things.
Yep, that's right. Okay. If we look at the specific companies and how they've done on earnings, the best stock performance after an earnings announcement was Netflix, a one-day gain of almost 25%.
Wow.
Akamai Technology, about 17% after their earnings announcements. On the other side of that list, we have a handful of other companies that just did not do quite as well, but we'll focus on the good ones for now. So good news for those guys there. So as we get into May, we start to think about the good old adage of sell in May and go away.
Mm.
What are your thoughts on that, David?
I don't like it. To me, it's this financial almanac idea that, you know, that what happens in the past is going to happen in the future. And also, it has a bit of timing element to it. And, you know, we don't like to try to play the timing game.
It does, and I'm always turned off by advice that rhymes. There are a couple of historical things, though, to look at, though. It's typically speaking, the months from May to October or so are almost flat. Generally speaking, since going back to 1950 or so, the Dow is flat from May to October, but up about 7% on average from November to April. That's terrific, but you know, we're talking about really market timing and short-term returns more than long-term investing. This year in particular, I think there's less reason to sell in May and go away than there has been in the past. I'm sure you remember the last 3 years, that would have been terrific advice in hindsight. But this year, the European debt crisis is significantly more stable than it has been in the last several years. I mentioned the ECB and their central bank announcement next week. It's possible that they do quantitative easing. And if they do so, then the three major central banks of the world, the U.S. Fed, the Bank of Japan, and the European Central Bank, will all be engaged in quantitative easing, which is really not a time, I think, to be selling stocks.
Well, and I would just chime in there real quick, Scott, that also, in addition to the whole quantitative easing thing, there's also a report out that maybe the European banks are going to lower rates as well. And if it really is expected that we will have, quote unquote, maybe a flat period going through the summer months, then why bother? Because you might just miss out.
You certainly could miss out. And Goldman Sachs, as a matter of fact, thinks you will miss out. They came out with a note to their clients last week that said that they were going to an overweight for the next 3 months on equities and also going to continue that stance out the next 12 months. So Goldman Sachs, you know, they definitely have some sway in the marketplace still. And I think if we get through May, a lot of this sell in May and go away stuff is self-fulfilling prophecy. So if the market starts to sell off in May, I think we'll see some additional participation in that. But I also think that if markets are stable in May, a lot of this money that's on the sideline, particularly retail money, does have a chance of coming back into the market.
I agree. And so let me recap. We've got earnings are up then. I mean, I know we've talked on previous programs that the expectations are not that high. And so, you know, for 60-some percent to beat estimates, you know, that's not a surprise to you. Jobless numbers, we're going to get to some job reports?
Not today. Next week, we're going to get to a lot. The upcoming week has several.
Okay. Well, in general, we're seeing that the jobless claims are not as strong as they have been. And then the potential for the rate changes and stimulus in Europe, that is all generally positive stuff.
Yes. Now, this possibility exists that we've already taken our benefit from that with the market up as much as it is.
So it could already be built in.
Yeah. The point being, you just never know.
All right. Well, Lisa's flagging us with the 5-second warning, which we just went right through, Scott and I did talking, and that's okay. We've got a flexible show, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
So you've been wanting to get a copy of my book. David Holland here telling you about how to get great advice and avoid scams. Well, you can, of course, get that from my website. But if you're out and about and you'd like to take a look at the book, pick it up, hold it in your hand, stop by Inspirations. John Hill's the owner. It's at 162 South Nova Road in Ormond Beach. And tell him that I sent you. And we are back. And Scott is just, he can hardly stand it. He wants to give you a Twinkie update.
I'll get to the Twinkie.
Oh, not yet? Okay. We're going to make him wait on that. Okay.
I do want to tell you about another you know, I love the contra indicators, meaning, you know, when we see a lot of money flowing into mutual funds, to me, that's a contra indicator. People are just a little bit too excited, and it's a good indication that perhaps the market is going to punish them. One of the great contra indicators from more of a macro call is the Barron's Magazine Big Money Poll. You know, if you see Barron's Magazine in the news aisle, and there's a bull on a pogo stick, and he's jumping up through a roof, that's probably a good time to start to be a little bit concerned about the direction of the market. We can say this historically. If we go back to May of 2000, the Barron's Magazine Big Money Poll said, still bullish Dow 13,000. And subsequently, the Dow went on to lose about 40% of its value. Followed that up in 2007 with another call for Dow 14,000. At the time, the Dow was 13.2, so not much of a call. Please tell me
they're not doing it again.
But we had a pretty big sell-off after that. And as of April 20th, 2013, Barron's Magazine Big Money Poll, Dow 16,000.
Oh, no.
We'll keep an eye on that. Okay. I was not overly happy.
Let's get rid of the pogo sticks.
Yep. I do want to give you a little bit of corporate news. JCPenney, which we seem to talk about a lot.
Yeah, I saw that.
We'll probably talk about them less now that Ron Cook has left. But George Soros is buying an 8% stake in JCPenney. Now, of Mr. Soros' money, it's only 1% of his investable money. So it's not a particularly meaningful position to Mr. Soros. But it is 8% of the stake in JCPenney, which is meaningful. Mr. Soros shares the same building with Pershing Square Capital manager Bill Ackman, who we've talked about several times. So I'm sure that's a lovely building.
So the market's up, or the stock value's up on the news because they're saying, hey, look, if Soros is going to get involved, maybe they'll help turn it around, and maybe there'll be some good things. And he's betting his money, so where he bets you his money, you bet with his money.
Yep, not a bad rationale there. And then on top of that, late Friday, we got the news that Goldman Sachs lined up a $1.75 billion loan for JCPenney, so that'll help them. It's an operating loan, so it'll help them sort of keep the doors open and keep things moving. And shares were up about 10% just simply on that news. So,
well, they've got a turnaround company in trying to advise them and keep their cash flow going. And they're still down around $900 million in cash, but you know, that's down from $1.5 billion.
Yeah, you know how I feel about the retailers.
I know. I hear it.
I did want to give you a Hostess Twinkies update. I know this will just please you to no end. The Twinkies will be back on store shelves by late July.
That's good news, actually.
Is it?
If you didn't go away in May, you get a chance to get some.
That's right. Well, the Twinkie will be back on the shelf in July. The new company is Hostess Brands LLC. This is the company from Apollo Global Management, which is a private equity firm that they have formed, and they're going to relaunch, if you will, the Twinkies and the cupcakes and the donuts and all that stuff. So
yeah, I think that's good. You know, out of the ashes rises hopefully a more successful company.
Yep, so Twinkie lovers rejoice.
We are, although I don't eat them very often, but they do have quite the shelf life, I hear.
I'm sure they do, yep. People were hoarding them on eBay, and that seems now to have been a misguided move.
Here's the good news. They're still edible.
Yeah, that's right. Here's a couple in New York whose home is literally their castle. This is a couple who was involved in flipping real estate, and they decided that they found it was an old armory building. It's literally a castle, 36,000 square foot classic red brick castle, two turrets, 134 windows. They bought it for $800,000, put $400,000 in renovations, and it is now on sale for $800,000.
Okay, so they bought it for $8,000, put $400,000 in it, they're going to sell it for $8,000.
Yeah, this has not gone well.
Okay, hey, listen, here's the problem. Who wants to clean 140 windows?
Yep, they've lived there for 2 years, and imagine the taxes and the heating bill, but I'm sure there's a lot of room for the kids to run around.
So. Absolutely. Well, that sounds very exciting.
Yeah.
So glad you gave us that one, Scott. Well, where are we at here? Why don't we take another quick break? I've got a bunch of stuff I want to get to, too. So let's go to break. We'll come right back, 30 seconds.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we're back. See, I told you we'd be back in 30 seconds. All right, so, and here's what you would have missed if you didn't stay tuned. I want to go around the world that Scott loves this segment of the show. All right, so year-to-date.
I love them all equally.
You do, that's good. You're a fair kind of guy. So, a prince, in fact, some have said.
Uh-huh.
So, Dow Jones Industrial Average year-to-date up about 12%. You talked earlier, Scott, about the mid-caps and small-caps and such and how they've been doing. S&P 500 up year-to-date 11%. Small-caps up 10.5%. And still in the middle, but still outperforming. Mid-cap stocks are a little over 12% as well. Now, back around the world, here's some really interesting stuff. On the downside, so to speak, down under for us here, at least in the United States, Brazil is off 10% year-to-date.
The whole South American markets and economies are struggling.
Okay. Any particular reason? Oil? That's part of it.
Oil has something to do with it. Yeah, there's instability. There are credit issues.
Okay.
And well, they're still emerging. They're still emerging.
You're right.
Markets.
They're still emerging. They're still building a well-developed country, right? With systems and all that good stuff. Switzerland up 16%. Another interesting bit of news there. A lot of the other countries around the world are kind of in the, you know, the mid to low single digits. A couple of interesting ones. Australia up almost 10%, even though their near trading partner, China, is down 3%.
Yeah, and they're commodities-based to a great extent, so that makes things harder for them when we get this volatility like we've seen in copper and gold and all that other stuff.
And then the champion, the rising sun, Japan, up 34% year-to-date.
Yeah, and even longer, going back to October or so, they're up really significantly over that period. That's what an export economy with a devaluing currency will give you.
Well, imagine if we had more of an... I mean, we have a pretty robust export economy, of course, but it's overshadowed by our imports.
Right.
So I wanted to get that in because that just gives us a little perspective on where things are. Otherwise, not a lot of other interesting stuff happening around the world. So there's my contribution, Scott. You can go back to some of what you've got there, and I'll be looking for a couple of the things I think are important to share.
All right. I mentioned that later on this week we have Facebook's earnings announcement. There's a lot of question with Facebook on how they monetize and how much benefit there is to companies who are on Facebook and have a social media presence. There's a company called SynCaps. It's a social media intelligence company. They conducted some research that was trying to get to the bottom of how much each like or friend is worth to a company who engages in that nonsense. And it turns out that each like or friend for a company that has a Facebook page is about $174 for that brand. That's a 28% increase compared to the same study in 2010.
Well, there's a lot of assumptions going into that.
Yeah, and I don't think that's ever anything they can really, really nail down, but it is interesting to quantify it to a certain extent. It also says that fans of a particular brand were found to spend about $116 annually on the company per year
over
non-fans, as well as 43% more within the brand's industry. So it is, if nothing else, it's a good tracker of demographics.
Well, here's a couple of interesting things I thought that we should comment on. AT&T is getting into home automation. You know, I like that whole concept.
Yeah.
And they're launching a digital life in 50 U.S. markets. You'll be able to turn your security alarm on, your control lights, your doors, your home temperature, all that from your smartphone for the bargain basement price of $29 a month plus installation and equipment.
Yeah, AT&T is coming up with some really, really innovative things. They're getting involved in the healthcare market, where they have things like sensors in your shoes for senior citizens. And if you fall over and your shoes recognize that they're pointed toes up, it sends a beam to something that can call a security department or a hospital or a relative.
So you're telling the okay. So we've got was that Maximal Smart, the shoe that you talk into? Well, instead of that, now you've got the. Your shoes are, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Yeah, AT&T really is getting very, very innovative, but there is some question about whether or not they're becoming more of a conglomerate and less of a communications company.
Yeah, that's
which
a
has
good
a
point.
Tendency to hinder growth.
It can if they get a little too diversified for their own good. And Amazon, speaking of diversification, and it is a jungle out there in the online purchasing and shipping world, Amazon's net fell 37%. To $82 million in the first quarter. Now, a lot of that was because they were spending a ton of money on enhancing their systems, order fulfillment, which is all about creating the local presence we talked about. They're kind of positioning themselves to compete. And it looks like, on a related note, that the Senate has cleared the way to get the online tax exclusion eliminated, so we could be looking at that getting passed very likely this year.
Yeah, which Amazon has actually been a big proponent of. eBay, not so much. eBay's been fighting it pretty hard. But also in those Amazon numbers, retail sales off pretty significantly for the first quarter, a lot of that which has to do with payroll tax.
Yeah. But there's other folks that are behind it too. Walmart's behind it, several of the retail. So I think it's coming. And I think that now the next competition point, of course, will be on probably same-day delivery.
Yeah.
So
Walmart is actually testing in some markets where they're going to have customers do the delivery for them. So if you show up at the store to buy, a mixer, and you happen to be going back to your neighborhood, you can make a couple bucks by bringing a shipment back to one of your neighbors.
Okay, well, here's a question I want to know. How will they know that? I mean, you got to go up and say, hey, I'm headed back home. Do you got anything I can take and deliver?
You know, they mine so much data. You know, when they ask you what's my zip code and all that kind of stuff, and I think it's probably something you'd obviously have to opt in for and things
well,
like
I
that.
Well, I bet when you swipe your credit card. You know, of course, it would have to be at the self-help, you know, because you can't get real help. You got to have the self-help thing. I hate that thing. But you got to do the self-help thing, and that's how they'd know, because they'd have all that data on your credit card.
There you go.
Very good. Interesting. Well, how about one more quick break, Scott, and we'll come back and plow through the rest of this very good information we want to share. Stay tuned.
Creating a world with less cancer takes a team effort. It takes survivors and caregivers and regular folks like you and me who all unite at Relay for Life. This year, nearly 4 million people nationwide will come together to celebrate, remember, and fight back. We're the American Cancer Society, the official sponsor of birthdays. Visit us at relayforlife.org.
And we are back. So, Scott, what else do you have to say over there? I've got one more big thing I got to get to, but you
well,
go first.
I know you are a former grocery store employee, so I wanted to share this with you. You know, a lot of grocery stores in the old days used to deliver. You see the old movies of people showing up with the paper
bag. I did that
one
time. We messed up a customer's order. This is some 29 years ago, but we messed up a customer's, and I was volunteered to deliver the correct stuff to the customer.
Well, there you go. And then in the internet bubble, you may recall there was a company called Webvan that was going to be the big grocery retailer, and they went out in a huge flame.
Yeah. Breaking all the eggs.
But we're starting to get back online with grocery delivery. There's the largest company is a company called Peapod that delivers specifically for Stop and Shop, which is a chain where I'm from, and Giant Foods. They've started in 1989. They have 24 markets. But there's another one called Fresh Direct, started in New York in 2002. And they're really starting to make some changes to the way people buy groceries, particularly in urban areas. They're trying to be very close to farm-to-door service. So they will order, say, a truckload of strawberries from a farmer based on pre-orders. So they're only ordering as many strawberries as they need. And as soon as the strawberries come into the warehouse, they're going straight to the retail consumer. None of this nonsense of going to a distribution center and then
inventory.
To a store. And that's right, exactly. And they're also talking about building a 200,000-square-foot greenhouse in the South Bronx so they can grow their own food, as well as putting garden space on top of the greenhouse. So they're talking about growing all their own vegetables, some of their own fruits, to get immediate farm.
So they're getting as close as they can to that customer, have it ready to go, and it literally just pull off the vine and reach over and hand it to them right next door.
Yeah, community members of the South Bronx not so happy about it. They say that there is environmental impact. They're filing a lawsuit. And
you know what would be really innovative is if actually we were to put like a garden in our backyard?
I mean, yeah.
Well, then it would be really close.
Residents of the South Bronx thinks there is no garden better than Yankee Stadium, to which I say, ha!
All right. Well, let me get this in. And I'm shuffling my papers. You can see me over here trying to find it frantically. But there was a very good article in the Wall Street Journal, and I'll have to do it from memory, which will be good enough. Because the key thing I want to tell you, Scott, is I saw a report. I know you are always hankering for – oh, there it is. Thank you. Scott pointed to it for me. Mm-hmm. Always hankering for – there it is, your African bonds. You're always wanting more bonds. I know you love bonds. Well, here's your opportunity to get in on African bonds that may take care of your thirst for yield. Rwanda is going to issue public and private debt that will raise some $400 million over a 10-year period. So they're going to issue 10-year bonds at a yield of 6.9%.
Terrific.
So about us.
In
what,
currency? Is that in U.S. dollars?
Oh, yeah. I would think that it would be a U.S. denominated currency. But, of course, that is the question is if you're going to be getting a 5% spread over the U.S. Treasury for an equal period of time. So that 5% represents, of course, the risk you're taking of the potential instability. And there's also concerns about the ability of the government to be able to handle the debt management and all of that.
Yeah, I think we'll pass on that one.
Okay.
Although yep. Africa is seen as a burgeoning emerging market for equity investors.
Exactly. But there's, you know, a lot of people saying, hey, there's plenty of room here. And, well, look, if they need help on how to manage their debt, maybe, you know, we'll send over a team from Washington to show them how to handle your debt well.
6% doesn't sound like much of a premium for the risk that I'm sure that entails.
No, I think that's a deal, actually. I think the risk is much higher because you don't know what may happen, which, of course, is what... You made the comment earlier about South America, some of the instability we're seeing there. It's the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on your list?
No, sir.
All right. Well, I've got a couple more things real quick to get to. All right. So we talked about the bonds. We talked about Amazon. Talked about tax-free shipping. That's all good stuff. This is interesting. I had a guest on not long ago, Scott, that we were talking to, and talked about the amount of money, and I want to tell me what you think about this, the amount of money that not the Federal Reserve here, but some of the other countries like China, Japan, some European countries where their central bank or their like a sovereign wealth fund is buying a significant amount of not just bonds, because we hear about the bond part where we buy the bonds, but buying stocks. In particular note, Japan is buying a good chunk, and of course that could be obviously impacting their stock markets run up because they're buying their own stocks in their country. So what do you think of that?
Well, I mean, there's always additional risk in place. I think our retirement system wouldn't be such a mess if we had some equity involvement, and the U.S. government's bought equity as well. It bought car manufacturers and massive banks back just a handful of years ago, so it's not an unprecedented thing.
That's true because it's governmental motors, right?
Right.
Okay. Very good. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Be sure to tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.